Hello, and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a feature article entitled Adverse Events in Pediatric Critical Care Non-Survivors with a Low Predicted Mortality Risk, a Multi-Center Case Control Study by Karen Verlot et al. Objectives. Some patients with a low predicted mortality risk in the PICU die. The contribution of adverse events to mortality in this group is unknown. The aim of this study was to estimate the occurrence of adverse events in low-risk non-survivors compared with low-risk survivors and high-risk PICU survivors and non-survivors and the contribution of adverse events to mortality. Design. Case control study. Admissions were selected from the National Dutch PICU Registry containing 53,789 PICU admissions between 2006 and 2017 in seven PICUs. PICU admissions were stratified into four groups based on mortality risk, lower high, and outcome, death or survival. Random samples were selected from the four groups. Cases were low-risk non-survivors. Control groups were as follows: low-risk survivors, high-risk non-survivors, and high-risk survivors. Adverse events were identified using the validated trigger tool method. Setting: patient chart review study. Patients, children admitted to the PICU with either a low predicted mortality risk of less than 1% or high predicted mortality risk greater than or equal to 30%. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. In total, 419 patients were included: 102 low-risk non-survivors, 107 low-risk survivors, 104 high-risk non-survivors, and 106 high-risk survivors. 93.1% of low-risk non-survivors had complex chronic conditions compared to 72.9% of low-risk survivors and a p-value of less than 0.01, 49% of high-risk non-survivors and a p-value of less than 0.001, and 48.1% of high-risk survivors and a p-value of 0.001. The occurrence of adverse events was higher in low-risk non-survivors at 76.5% compared to low-risk survivors at 13.1% and high-risk non-survivors at 47.1% with a p-value less than 0.001. The most frequent adverse events in low-risk non-survivors were hospital-acquired infections and drug and/or fluid-related adverse events. Low-risk non-survivors suffered from more severe adverse events compared with low-risk survivors and high-risk survivors with a p-value less than 0.001. In 30.4% of low-risk non-survivors, an adverse event contributed to death. In 8.8%, this adverse event was considered preventable. Conclusions. Significant and preventable adverse events were found in low-risk PICU non-survivors. 76.5% of low-risk non-survivors had one or more adverse events. In 30.4% of low-risk non-survivors, an adverse event contributed to mortality. Abstract 2 is a feature article entitled Characteristics and Outcomes of Cardiac Arrest in Adult Patients Admitted to Pediatric Services, a descriptive analysis of the American Heart Association's Get With the Guidelines Resuscitation Data by Amanda O'Halloran et al. Objectives. Differences between adult and pediatric in-hospital cardiac arrest are well described. Although most adults are cared for on adult services, pediatric services often admit adults, particularly those with chronic conditions. The objective of this study is to describe in-hospital cardiac arrest in adults admitted to pediatric services. Design. Retrospective cohort analysis from the American Heart Association's Get With the Guidelines Resuscitation Registry of a subpopulation of adults with in-hospital cardiac arrest while admitted to pediatric services. Multivariable logistic regression was used to evaluate adjusted survival outcomes and compare outcomes between age groups, 18 to 21, 22 to 25, and greater than or equal to 26 years old. Setting: hospitals contributing to the Get With the Guidelines Resuscitation Registry. Patients: adult-aged patients greater than or equal to 18 years old with an index pulseless in-hospital cardiac arrest while admitted to a pediatric service from 2000 to 2018. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. A total of 491 adult in-hospital cardiac arrests were recorded on pediatric services at 17 sites during the 19 years of review, and these events represented 0.1% of all adult in-hospital cardiac arrests. In total, 221 cases met inclusion criteria, with 139 events excluded due to an initial rhythm of bradycardia with poor perfusion. Median patient age was 22 years old with an interquartile range of 19 to 28 years. 98% of patients had at least one pre-existing condition. Return of spontaneous circulation occurred in 63% of events, and 30% of the patients survived to discharge. All age groups had similar rates of survival to discharge, with a range of 26 to 37% and a p-value equal to 0.37, and survival did not change over the study period, with a range of 26 to 37% and a p-value equal to 0.23 for adjusted survival to discharge. Conclusions. In this cohort of adults with in-hospital cardiac arrest while admitted to a pediatric service, we failed to find an association between survival outcomes and age. Additional research is needed to better understand resuscitation in this population. Abstract 3 is a feature article entitled Trends in Disease Severity Among Critically Ill Children with Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus 2, a retrospective multicenter cohort study in the United States by Catherine Ross et al. Objectives. To describe trends in critical illness from severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2 or SARS-CoV-2 infection in children over the course of the COVID-19 pandemic, we hypothesized that PICU admission rates were higher in the Omicron period compared with the original outbreak, but that fewer patients needed endotracheal intubation. Design, retrospective cohort study. Setting. This study took place in 9 U.S. PICUs over 3 weeks in January 2022, the Omicron period, compared with 3 weeks in March 2020, the original period. Patients. Patients less than or equal to 21 years old who screened positive for SARS-CoV-2 infection by polymerase chain reaction or hospital-based rapid antigen test and were admitted to a PICU or intermediate care unit were included. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. A total of 267 patients, 239 Omicron and 28 original, were reviewed. 45 patients in the Omicron cohort had incidental SARS-CoV-2 and were excluded from analysis. The Omicron cohort patients were younger compared with the original cohort patients. The median age in the Omicron cohort was 6 years, with an interquartile range of 1.3 to 13.3 years, and the median age in the original cohort patients was 14 years, with an interquartile range of 8.3 to 17.3 years, and a p-value equal to 0.001. The Omicron period compared with the original period was associated with an average increase in COVID-19-related PICU admissions of 13 patients per institution, with a 95% confidence interval of 6 to 36 and a p-value equal to 0.008, which represents a 7-fold increase in the absolute number of admissions. We failed to identify an association between cohort period, Omicron versus original, and odds of intubation, with an odds ratio of 0.7 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.3 to 1.7. However, we cannot exclude the possibility of up to 70% reduction in intubation. Conclusions. COVID-19-related PICU admissions were 7 times higher in the Omicron wave compared with the original outbreak. We could not exclude the possibility of up to 70% reduction in use of intubation in the Omicron versus original epic, which may represent differences in PICU or hospital admission policy in the later period, or pattern of disease, or possibly the impact of vaccination. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation entitled Characteristics of Prognostic Statements During Family Conferences of Critically Ill Children by Divya Gupta et al. Objectives. Discussion of prognosis is an essential component of decision-making family conferences in critical care. We do not know how clinicians convey prognosis to families of critically ill children. We therefore aimed to evaluate the frequency of prognostic statements and the message and meaning conveyed through each statement during PICU family conferences. Design, retrospective mixed method study. Setting, PICU of a single quaternary medical center. Patients, critically ill children and their families participating in PICU family conferences of critical medical decision making. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We analyzed 72 transcripts from audio recorded PICU family conferences to identify prognostic statements. Descriptive thematic content analysis was used to elucidate the message and meaning of each prognostic statement. Prognosis was not discussed in 19 of 72 or 26% of family conferences. Of the other 53 conferences where prognostic statements were made, 60% or 67 of 112 of statements conveyed a message, i.e. prognostic medical information and a meaning, i.e. anticipated impact on patient or family. Messages of prognostic statements fell within 8 themes: uncertain recovery, delayed recovery, progressive decline, escalation of support, attributable complications, no progress, irreversible, and probability of death. Meanings of prognostic statements fell within 6 themes: restoration of health, activities of daily living, additional equipment, prolonged care needs, brain dysfunction, and death. Broadly, clinicians discuss prognostic information in three categories: loss of time, i.e. prolonged care needs, function, i.e. additional medical equipment, or cure, i.e. death. Conclusions. In nearly half of discussions, or 32 of 72, or 44%, where families were asked to make critical medical decisions, clinicians did not provide a prognostic statement including a message and meaning. When discussed, prognostic information was conveyed in three categories: loss of time, function, or cure. Providing families context in this framework, particularly in times of uncertainty, may improve the family's ability to make informed, value-driven medical decisions for their child. Abstract 5 is the cardiac intensive care article entitled End of Life in Pediatric Patients Supported by Ventricular Assist Devices, a Network Database Cohort Study by Seth Hollander et al. Objectives: most pediatric patients on ventricular assist device or VAD survive to transplantation. Approximately 15% will die on VAD support, and the circumstances at the end of life are not well understood. We therefore sought to characterize patient location and invasive interventions used at the time of death. Design: retrospective database study of a cohort meeting inclusion criteria. Setting: 36 centers participating in the Advanced Cardiac Therapies Improving Outcomes Network, or ACTION, registry. Patients: children who died on VAD therapy in the period March 2012 to September 2021. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of the 117 of 721 patients, or 16%, who died on VAD, the median age was 5 years old, with an interquartile range of 1 to 16 years, at a median of 43 days, with an interquartile range of 17 to 91 days post-implant. Initial goals of therapy were: bridge to consideration for candidacy for transplantation in 60 of 117, or 51%, bridge to transplantation in 44 of 117, or 38%, bridge to recovery in 11 of 117, or 9%, or destination therapy, i.e. VAD as the endpoint, in 2 of 117, or 2%. The most common cause of death was multiple organ failure in 35 of 117, or 30%, followed by infection in 12 of 117, or 10%. 85 of 92, or 92%, died with a functioning device in place. Most patients were receiving invasive interventions, i.e. mechanical ventilation, vasoactive infusions, etc., at the end of life. 12 patients, or 10%, died at home. Conclusions: 1 in 6 pediatric VAD patients die while receiving device support, with death occurring soon after implant and usually from non-cardiac causes. Aggressive interventions are common at the end of life. The ACTION registry data should inform future practices to promote informed patient, family, and clinician decision-making to hopefully reduce suffering at the end of life. Abstract 6 is a brief report entitled Pharmacokinetic Modeling of Optimized Midazolam and Pentobarbital Dosing Used in Treatment Protocols of Refractory Status Epilepticus by Matthew Luchet et al. Objectives: to model bolus dosing, infusion rate, and weaning rate on theoretical serum concentration of midazolam and pentobarbital used in the treatment of refractory status epilepticus. Design: 1 and 2 compartment in silico pharmacokinetic models of midazolam and pentobarbital. Interventions: we compared the model variables used in midazolam and pentobarbital protocols for standard refractory status epilepticus. Measurements and main results. Standard refractory status epilepticus treatment protocols result in steady-state serum concentrations that are 6.2 to 9-fold higher for the 1-compartment model and 2.3 to 4.7-fold higher for the 2-compartment model. In the model, not including bolus doses delays the achievement of serum steady-state concentration by 0.5 and 2.7 hours for midazolam and pentobarbital, respectively. Abrupt discontinuation of these medications reduces modeled medication exposure by 1.1 and 6.4 hours, respectively. Conclusions: our in silico pharmacokinetic modeling of standard midazolam and pentobarbital dosing protocols for refractory status epilepticus suggests potential variables to optimize in future clinical studies. Abstract 7 is a brief report entitled Variable Identification of Children with Medical Complexity in United States PICUs by Julia Hennigan et al. Objectives: children with medical complexity are at increased risk for critical illness and adverse outcomes. However, there is currently no consensus definition of medical complexity in pediatric critical care research. Design: retrospective cross-sectional cohort study. Setting, 131 U.S. PICUs participating in the Virtual Pediatric Systems Database. Subjects, children less than 21 years old admitted from 2017 to 2019. Multisystem complexity was identified on the basis of two common definitions of medical complexity. Pediatric complex chronic conditions, greater than or equal to two qualifying diagnoses, and pediatric medical complexity algorithm, complex chronic disease. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 291,583 index PICU admissions, 226,430, or 77.7%, met at least one definition of multisystem complexity, including 168,332 patients identified by complex chronic conditions and 201,537 by pediatric medical complexity algorithm. Of these, 143,439, or 63.3%, were identified by both definitions. Cohen kappa was 0.39, indicating only fair agreement between definitions. Children identified by complex chronic conditions were younger and were less frequently scheduled admissions and discharged home from the ICU than pediatric medical complexity algorithm. The most common reason for admission was respiratory in both groups, although this represented a larger proportion of complex chronic conditions. ICU and hospital length of stay were longer for patients identified by complex chronic conditions. No difference in median severity of illness scoring was identified between definitions, but complex chronic condition patients had higher in-hospital mortality. Readmission to the ICU in the subsequent year was seen in approximately one-fifth of patients in either group. Conclusions. Commonly used definitions of medical complexity identified distinct populations of children with multisystem complexity in the PICU with only fair agreement. Abstract 8 is a review article entitled Prevalence and Readmission Rates of Discharge Directly Home from the PICU, a Systematic Review by Daphne Doss et al. Objectives. Critically ill patients are increasingly being discharged directly home from PICU as opposed to discharge home via the ward. The objective was to assess the prevalence, safety, and satisfaction of discharge directly home from PICUs. Data sources. We searched PubMed, Medline, MBASE, PsycINFO, and CINAHL for studies published between January 1991 and June 2021. Study selection. We included observational or randomized studies of children up to 18 years old that reported on the prevalence, safety, or satisfaction of discharge directly home from the PICU compared with the ward. Safety outcomes included readmission, unplanned visits to the hospital, and any adverse events. We excluded case series, reviews, and studies discharging patients to other facilities. Data extraction. Two independent reviewers evaluated 88 full-text articles. Five studies met eligibility with 362,868 patients. Only one study had discharge directly home as a primary outcome. Data synthesis. Prevalence of discharge directly to home from the PICU ranged from less than 1% to 23%, with a random effects proportion 7.7 and a 95% confidence interval 1.3 to 18.6. Readmissions to the PICU, which was the only safety outcome, were significantly lower in the discharge directly home group compared with the ward group in two of three studies, with a p-value less than 0.0001. No studies reported on patient or family satisfaction. Conclusions. The prevalence of discharge directly home from the PICU ranges from 1% to 23%. PICU readmission rates do not appear to increase after discharge directly home. Caution is needed in the interpretation of the results, given the significant heterogeneity of the included studies. Further high-quality studies are needed to evaluate the safety of discharge directly home from the PICU and support families in this transition. Abstract 9 is an online clinical investigation entitled Video Recorded In Situ Simulation Before Moving to the New Combined Neonatal/Pediatric Intensive Care Facility, an Observational Study, by Teresa Kramer et al. Objectives. Moving an ICU to a new location is a challenge. The objective of the study was to use in situ simulation to help identify potential problems and solutions with the new environment before commencing patient care. Design. Planned, observational, video-recorded simulation study using four scenarios: delivery room management of term neonate, delivery room management of extremely low birth weight infant, management and transfer of an infant with respiratory syncytial virus, bronchiolitis, and apnea, and management and transfer of an adolescent with septic shock. Setting, academic tertiary neonatal and combined neonatal ICU/PICU. Participants, 16 volunteers, 8 physicians, and 8 nurses. Interventions, standardized briefing introduction with before versus after survey of thoughts about each scenario, and after 8 weeks, debriefing at least 60 minutes and additional video recording. Measurements and main results. A total of 91 potential problem areas were identified and included issues related to the following: technical aspects with an N of 29, infrastructure with an N of 27, administration with an N of 19, and structure with an N of 16. 53 or 58% of these potential issues could be resolved before the move, including 15 of 29 technical, 15 of 27 infrastructure, 9 of 19 administration, and 14 of 16 structural. The video analysis revealed an additional 13 problem areas: 6 technical, 3 infrastructure, 2 administration, and 2 structural. Participants felt more confident 8 weeks after the simulations, with the chi-squared equal to 12.125 and p-value less than 0.002. All 16 participants confirmed the usefulness of the in-situ simulation. The majority wanted further introduction to the new ward with an n equal to 13 and noted a positive impact of the changes on the new ward with an n equal to 12. Conclusions: in-situ simulation before moving into a new facility identifies numerous potential problem areas. Survey shows that providers feel better prepared and are more confident. Video recording reveals additional difficulties not addressed in conventional verbal debriefing. Abstract 10 is an online clinical investigation entitled Discharge Directly Home from the PICU, a Retrospective Cohort Study by Nadia Rumeliotis et al. Objective: healthcare constraints with decreasing bed availability cause strain in acute care units, and patients are more frequently being discharged directly home. Our objective was to describe the population, predictors, and explore PICU readmission rates of patients discharged directly home from PICU compared with those discharged to the hospital ward, then home. Design: an observational cohort study. Setting: children admitted to the PICU of CHU St. Justine between January 2014 and 2020. Patients: patients less than 18 years old who survived their PICU stay and were discharged directly home or to an inpatient ward. Patients discharged directly home were compared with patients discharged to the ward using descriptive statistics. Logistic regression was used to identify factors associated with home discharge. Propensity scores were used to compare PICU readmission rates in patients discharged directly home to those discharged to the ward. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Among the 5,531 admissions included, 594, or 10.7%, were discharged directly home from the PICU. Patients who were more severely ill, had invasive ventilation, or had vasoactive agents were less likely to be discharged directly home. Severe illness had an odds ratio of 0.93 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.9 to 0.97. Invasive ventilation had an odds ratio of 0.7 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.53 to 0.92. And vasoactive agents had an odds ratio of 0.7 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.53 to 0.92. Diagnoses associated with discharge directly home were acute intoxication, postoperative ear, nose, and throat care, and shock states. There was no difference in the rate of readmission to the PICU at 2 and 28 days between propensity-matched patients discharged to the ward 2 or less days compared with those discharged directly home. The 2-day relative risk was 0.2 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.02 to 1.71, and the 28-day relative risk was 1.2 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.61 to 3.36. Conclusions: discharge directly home from the PICU is increasing locally. The population includes less severely ill patients with rapidly resolving diagnoses. Rates of PICU readmission between patients discharged directly home from the PICU versus to the ward are similar, but safety of the practice requires ongoing evaluation. Abstract 11 is an online review article entitled Antimicrobial Stewardship Programs in PICU Settings, a Systematic Review by Elisabeth Tarafa et al. Objectives: development of antimicrobial stewardship programs is a strategy for prevention and management of emergence of antimicrobial-resistant organisms. In this study, we systematically reviewed the literature on antimicrobial stewardship interventions in PICUs and analyzed approaches, structure, implementation, and outcomes of antimicrobial stewardship programs. Data sources: PubMed and Scopus databases were systematically searched for studies published from January 1, 2007 to December 31, 2020, reporting interventions on judicious use of antimicrobials in PICUs. Last search was performed on February 28, 2021. Data selection: studies that evaluated an intervention in a PICU setting or both in PICU and other settings and reported separate results for PICU were eligible for full text review. Studies that had implemented stewardship in the entire hospital, including the PICU, but without presenting dedicated PICU data, were excluded from the analysis. Data extraction. The strategy of intervention, structure of the antimicrobial stewardship program team, implementation, and outcomes were assessed with a checklist tool for all studies included in the analysis. Risk of bias was assessed with the Cochrane Risk of Bias in Non-Randomized Studies of Interventions tool. Data synthesis. 13 articles were found, 11 that applied antimicrobial stewardship programs in PICUs and 2 at hospital level. All PICU-dedicated antimicrobial stewardship programs applied a multimodal intervention combining strategy simultaneously. Audit with feedback in 6 of 11 and facility-specific clinical practice guidelines in 7 of 11 were the most common strategies. A multidisciplinary team was formulated in all antimicrobial stewardship programs except for 3 biomarker-based interventions. 6 of 11 studies included techniques to enhance behavior change, and 1 implemented a behavior-based intervention. Antibiotic consumption was evaluated in all antimicrobial stewardship programs, cost in 3 of 11, antibiotic resistance in 1 of 11, length of hospitalization in 6 of 11, and mortality in 8 of 11. All hospital-wide antimicrobial stewardship programs used audit with feedback in addition to facility-specific clinical practice guidelines and assessed antimicrobial consumption, expenditures, length of stay, and mortality. Conclusions. The prevalence of antimicrobial stewardship programs in PICUs is limited, and few programs follow all of the currently available recommendations. Abstract 12 is an online review article entitled Prognostic and Goals of Care Communication in the PICU, a Systematic Review, by Megan McSherry et al. Objective: admission to the PICU may result in substantial short- and long-term morbidity for survivors and their families. Engaging caregivers in discussion of prognosis is challenging for PICU clinicians. We sought to summarize literature on prognostic goals of care conversations in the PICU in order to establish current evidence-based practice, highlight knowledge gaps, and identify future directions. Data sources: PubMed, including Medline and PubMed Central, Embase, CIN-AHL, PsycINFO, and Scopus. Study selection: we reviewed published articles from 2001 to 2022 that examined 6 themes within prognostic goals of care conversations contextualized to the PICU. 1. Caregiver perspectives. 2. Clinician perspectives. 3. Documentation patterns. 4. Communication skills training for clinicians. 5. Family conferences. And 6. Prospective interventions to improve caregiver-clinician communication. Data extraction. 2 reviewers independently assessed eligibility using preferred reporting items for systematic reviews and meta-analysis methodology. Data synthesis. Of 1,420 publications screened, 65 met criteria for inclusion with several key themes identified. Parent and clinician perspectives highlighted the need for clear, timely, and empathetic prognostic communication. Communication skills training programs are evaluated by a participant's self-perceived improvement. Caregiver and clinician views on quality of family meetings may be discordant. Documentation of prognostic goals of care conversations is inconsistent and most likely to occur shortly before death. Only 2 prospective interventions to improve caregiver-clinician communication in the PICU have been reported. The currently available studies reflect an overrepresentation of bereaved white English-speaking caregivers of children with known chronic conditions. Conclusions. Future research should identify evidence-based communication practices that enhance caregiver-clinician prognostic goals of care conversations in the PICU and address the following. 1. Caregiver and clinician perspectives of underserved and limited English proficiency populations. 2. Inclusion of caregivers who are not physically present at the bedside. 3. Standardized communication training programs with broader multidisciplinary staff inclusion. 4. Improved design of patient and caregiver education materials. 5. The development of pediatric decision aids. And 6. Inclusion of long-term post-PICU outcomes as a measure for prognostic goals of care conversation interventions. Abstract 13 is an online review article entitled Strategies to Reduce Diagnostic Blood Loss and Anemia in Hospitalized Patients, a Scoping Review, by Teen Francois et al. Objectives: blood sampling is a recognized contributor to hospital-acquired anemia. We aimed to bundle all published neonatal, pediatric, and adult data regarding clinical interventions to reduce diagnostic blood loss. Data sources. 4 electronic databases were searched for eligible studies from inception until May 2021. Study selection. 2 reviewers independently selected studies using predefined criteria. Data extraction. 1 author extracted data, including study design, population, period, intervention type and comparator, and outcome variables, including diagnostic blood volume and frequency, anemia, and transfusion. Data synthesis. Of 16,132 articles identified, we included 39 trials, 12 or 31% were randomized control trials. Among 6 types of interventions, 27 studies or 69% were conducted in adult patients, 6 or 15% in children, and 6 or 15% in neonates. Overall results were heterogeneous. Most studies targeted a transfusion reduction with an N equal to 28 or 72%, followed by reduced blood loss with an N equal to 24 or 62%, and test frequency with an N equal to 15 or 38%. Small volume blood tubes with an N equal to 7 and blood conservation devices with an N equal to 9 lead to a significant reduction of blood loss in adults in 8 of 9 and less transfusion of adults in 5 of 8 and neonates in 1 of 1. Point of care testing, N equals 6, effectively reduced blood loss in 4 of 4 and transfusion in 4 of 6 in neonates and adults. Bundles including staff education and protocols reduced blood test frequency and volume in adults in 7 of 7 and children in 5 of 5. Conclusions. Evidence on interventions to reduce diagnostic blood loss and associated complications is highly heterogeneous. Blood conservation devices and smaller tubes appear effective in adults, whereas point-of-care testing and bundled interventions including protocols and teaching seem promising in adults and children. Abstract 14 is an online brief report entitled Prescription of Steroids in General Pediatric Intensive Care Patients, a 2-Center Retrospective Observational Study by Rebecca Mitting et al. Objectives: designing randomized trials to determine utility, dose, and timing of steroid administration in the management of critically unwell children may be difficult owing to a high proportion of patients who receive steroids as part of current care. We aim to describe steroid use among all patients in 2 general PICUs. Design: retrospective observational study using a multi-level logistic regression model. Setting: 2 tertiary general mixed medical and surgical PICUs. Patients: all admissions between 2016 and 2019. All parenteral or enteral steroid prescriptions were identified, and steroid type, frequency, timing, and peak daily doses were recorded. The outcome measure was mortality prior to PICU discharge. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. There were 5,483 admissions during the study period, and 1,804, or 33% of these, involved prescription of at least 1 steroid. Among patients prescribed steroids, the median peak daily dose when steroids were prescribed was 2.4 mg per kilogram per dose of prednisolone equivalent with an interquartile range of 1.6 to 3.6, and the median time to peak steroid doses was 2 days with an interquartile range of 1 to 5 days. Administration of steroid was associated with increased risk-adjusted mortality odds ratio of 1.37 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.04 to 1.79. Steroids were prescribed in 42.3% of admissions in which the child did not survive to PICU discharge. Among children who were prescribed steroids, use of hydrocortisone and methylprednisolone or starting steroids later than 2 days after PICU admission were associated with an increased mortality, with an odds ratio of 1.93 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.15 to 3.25. Hydrocortisone use had an odds ratio of 6.75 and a 95% confidence interval of 3.79 to 12.27, and methylprednisolone use had an odds ratio of 7.85 with a 95% confidence interval of 4.21 to 14.56. Conclusions. Steroids are widely used in pediatric critical illness and non-survival associated with increased frequency of use. This association appears to be related to steroid class and timing of dose, both likely to reflect indication for steroid prescription. Prospective trials are required to estimate these complex risks and benefits, and study design will need to consider these patterns. This concludes the abstracts for the January 2023 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.